If you believe assault is an act, not an adjective, your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. What do you believe? Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener. Because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The Two-Way Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live, right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
Good morning, everybody. Pleasure to have you here. Thank you very much, RJ Hinder. Guys, I got to tell you, it's pretty much the height of winter solstice. I think winter solstice, I think was yesterday, the shortest day of the year. I got up this morning and I'm getting ready. I'm looking around and I realize, you know, I'm getting ready to walk out the door. It's still dark outside. I'm thinking, wow, it's like the last time I got in my car and drove to the studio was Friday morning, about the same time. And I was up pretty early Sunday morning, so I went out shooting. I'll tell you about that in a little bit. But it was still dark. I'm like, what the hell is going on? And my girlfriend gets up. She says, why are you up so early? I'm getting ready to walk out the door. I'm like, what are you talking about? I look over at the clock on the microwave, and it says 5:30 in the morning. I usually leave the house around 6:30 in the morning. And I'm wondering, what is going on here? Well, I had to reset my alarm last night, and evidently I pounded the hour for the regular clock part, an hour four, so I got up an hour early today, which sucks. I mean, I love my sleep. I don't like having to get up a moment before I actually have to. But anyhow, I got plenty of stuff done this morning, so that was good. I'm still dealing with this issue with my hand. Why I wasn't here yesterday, in fact, because it was just, it's weird. It's like I might have a couple of good days with the hand and then a bad day. And a couple of good days and a bad day. I ran out of my, I finished my 10-day cycle of antibiotics yesterday, amoxicillin I was on, pretty heavy dosages. There's still some infection in my hand. It's not nearly as bad. It's not nearly as swollen. My index finger on my right hand, my trigger finger, is notably more swollen than on my other hand. The back of my hand is almost normal, but there's still a little infection in there. So since I ran out of the amoxicillin, I have started it about two days ago, a fairly heavy regimen of colloidal silvers, both intaking a fair amount, a reasonable amount, like a couple ounces about every 4 hours, plus I am soaking my hand in the Epsom salts with a little bit of colloidal silver inside the water, as well as some hydrogen peroxide in the water, and I'm soaking that for about 20 minutes at a time, a few times a day. And then when I'm done with that, I actually will put a very high concentration, like 25 parts per million colloidal silver eyedropper. I'll take this stuff and I'll drop that actually on a couple of the wounds. So I've got a very aggressive schedule going for that, and I have an appointment tomorrow with a specialist, an orthopedic hand specialist, that luckily actually comes out from Vegas once a week. So that ought to cost me about $300 a couple days before Christmas, so that's lovely. But I went shooting on Sunday, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about that experience when we come back, as well as some news. A couple more cops were shot in the state of Washington last night. They weren't killed, but they were shot. They returned fire, killed the gunman. But yet another ambush against cops in the state of Washington. I'm not sure what's going on up there. But we'll cover that story after we come back as well. So stay tuned. This is Bill Carnes, your host on 2A Radio.
Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes is live. 1-800-313-9443.
I decided Saturday I got my hand working fairly well, did some physical therapy and such. So Sunday I decide I'm going to go shooting. Well, I did. And it didn't go quite so well. I had set up, I own a Glock, a Model 17, a full-size 9mm. And I had grabbed some softer shooting rounds. And I had I forget the name. Gosh, the company name. They make a guide rod, you know, where you've got the guide rod that goes under the barrel, put the spring around it. And they make a guide rod that's actually mercury-filled. There's a mercury encapsulated in it, and it actually helps reduce recoil. And I dug that thing out and put that into this Glock 17. And then the trigger press was still pretty heavy, and I had like about a 5.5, 6-pound trigger in there. So I dropped a 3.5-pound connector standard spring in there. So now I have a trigger that's about the same weight as a 1911. And I pressed it a few times, and it felt heavy. Just my finger's weak. It doesn't have very much range of motion. If I needed to do a Larry, Moe, and Curly, like, to the eyes sort of thing, it would really hurt my finger. I'd have to probably go with my middle and ring finger, but I can't separate those like Spock used to, or I guess it was Mork from Mork and Mindy, the whole Nanu Nanu. No, it was the Live Long and Prosper deal. I can't really do that. I don't have the ability to do that with my right hand. So I'm going to have to pop him in the eye with my left hand. All right? Maybe that would actually surprise him. They're not expecting a lefty. Anyhow, with that being said, I went out and I shot, and I probably put about 100 rounds downrange. About 50 rounds downrange with my right hand, which is my standard firing hand, and about 50 rounds having transitioned over to my left hand, because that's the one that I'm actually using right now as my go-to hand when it comes to the shooting thing. And I got to tell you, the first shot that I took with my right hand was pretty delicate, wondering how it was going to go. And I got this snap, and it felt like I was shooting a 44 Magnum just in this hand because of the, I guess, the sharp stinging pain that went through. After about 100 rounds, I had to go home. I excused the guys I was shooting with. I'm like, guys, I'm sorry. I'm done. I'm going to go home and cry. I'm going home. I'm going to soak my hand. I'm going to, like, put ice on it, and I'm going to go home and cry. This just plain hurts. So, anyhow, it's daily improvements, but it's just not right. Just not right. So, anyhow, that being said, I'm not really sure what's going on in the state of Washington. However, two sheriff's officers who are responding to a dispute between a couple of brothers, they were ambushed by one of the brothers who decided to go outdoors and lie in wait with a gun after being welcomed into the home by others. This is not this guy's home. And the gunman was killed by the officers, who were, in fact, seriously injured. The cops were shot. They stayed in the fight. They finished the fight, took this guy out, but they got hit, and they were hit bad. So a lousy holiday sending for these two guys. The shooting is the third in 3 months in which authorities say a gunman has taken aim at law enforcement officials in Washington State. Pierce County Sheriff's spokesman Ed Troyer said a sergeant and a deputy were shot around 8:45 last night while responding to a dispute between David Crable and his brother near Eatonville, Washington, which is a rural community outside of the Cascade foothills. Crable, 35, shot the two officers before he was killed when they returned fire. The names of the officers were not immediately released. Now, I have to tell you, in a gunfight, to be able to hit the bad guy is difficult enough with all of the, you know, being amped up. To do it after being hit is doubly or triply difficult. So, well, good job to the cops. I would imagine it was something like a hail of gunfire, because that's generally the type of response that you would give, rather than, you know, sighting it on your sights, taking your time, getting a good press. It's probably a hail of gunfire, which is fine. Somebody's lying in wait. As long as you have a clear rule for, clear background, foreground and background to shoot, a hail of gunfire will work in a situation like that, especially when you're returning fire. You just want to make sure that the bullets don't end up in somebody where they don't belong. All right, they don't belong, and if they don't belong in one certain person, make sure they don't get hit. You got to have a clear foreground and background. Let's see, the officers were greeted at the door by Crable's brother, and while Crable was in the house, while Crable was in the house arming himself. When the deputies entered the home, Crable opened fire from upstairs, hitting one of the officers multiple times. This is somebody that was lying in wait for our guys, armed themselves with the intent on shooting them, Troyer told reporters near the shooting scene. There's not much we're going to be able to do when somebody is hiding and arming themselves. And while we have somebody else inviting us into the residence, and the second person opens fire on us. Crable's family tried to help the wounded officers by providing first aid and barricading themselves in a room away from the shooter. It looks like the people that were in the residence went out of their way to help our people, according to this police spokesman. The sergeant was taken to the Mardigan Army Medical Center and was listed in serious condition. The deputy was airlifted to Harborview Medical Center in Seattle and remained in critical condition in the intensive care unit. Most people of the community, as we have seen in the last few weeks, have a tremendous regard for law enforcement, Pierce County Sheriff Paul Pastor said at the scene late Monday night. But there are people in the community that don't come from there, and that's the people we deal with day after day. Pierce County Sheriff records also show Crable was convicted earlier this year of exhibiting or displaying a weapon with intent to intimidate. All right. He also had been arrested for malicious mischief and assault and had a no-contact order by his 16-year-old daughter who lived with Crable's brother. And it also says Troyer said Crable had a history of terrorizing his family. Now, this is an instant where you've got somebody who is unstable. He's just definitely unstable. The family knows it. When his own daughter has a no-contact order issued by the courts, it terrorizes his family. He's got convictions dealing with doing dumb things with a gun. This, guys, this is a powder keg. This is a powder keg that cannot, should not, and in no way, shape, or form should ever be ignored. All right? If you have a family member, a friend, anybody like this in your life, you must distance yourself from them and stay away. Now, I have a friend that I have known for years, several years. And this particular friend had a very tragic incident in his life. And within this tragic incident, through quite honestly the fault of several others, he had a hand in an accidental death of someone else, somebody actually that he knew. And the situation was actually dictated by many other situations, many other factors, which were never part of his control, that were in others' controls that you just couldn't see coming. It was a tragedy. It was an accident nobody saw coming. And it really messed this guy up. And this guy, yeah, he's a gun owner. He's got guns. He knows how to shoot. He's trained. He does well. And it got to the point where I saw this guy as a friend of mine, somebody I've considered a close friend, to just start becoming so unstable with his actions, with his intentions, with what's been going on in his life in the last year or so. Just so many things that I saw to be unstable. And I did my very best to try to intervene and just say, look, the way you're looking at things is really off kilter. Let's relax a little bit. You know, you don't need to go talking about, you know, being all pissed off and wanting to grab a gun. That's not the way to do it. You definitely know better than that. Went through all this stuff, and finally I realized this guy was a powder keg. He turned into a powder keg. And I had tried everything I could think of to try to get this guy into a proper mindset and away from the idea of just being so screwed up and potentially violent. So I made a couple calls. And we're not talking like to anybody to go disarm this guy, but I made a couple of calls to some people that I thought could intervene and help this guy, some people on a professional basis that also knew this guy on a personal level. And I severed all ties a couple of months ago. Absolutely all ties. No phone calls, no emails, no contact, no nothing. You know, this dude, he's been a buddy for a long time. This has been very, very difficult. But I severed absolutely all ties. And about 2 weeks ago, I get an email. Hey, I've been hanging out with, you know, a couple of people and, you know, talking with them. And I got to tell you, I didn't really realize how messed up I was. You know, I'm getting back. I think I owe you an apology. And, you know, blah, da, 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 da. So it would appear as though potential tragedy averted. But I'm telling you from personal experience, personal and professional, if you see someone who's like this, who is a powder keg, you must distance yourself at whatever the cost to try to keep yourself and others around you safe. Because, as I've said before, and you know from history, if anybody's going to be the victim of a violent crime, most likely you're going to know the perpetrator. Stay tuned, folks. More to come after the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio. I've been roaming around, always looking down at all I see.
You can have the alcohol and tobacco. Leave the firearms to us right now. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes.
All right, guys, time for me to go off on a tangent here. Coming out of San Antonio, Texas, a defense attorney for the Army psychiatrist charged in the deadly shootings at Fort Hood says that the Army is prohibiting Major Nadal Hassan, his client, from praying in Arabic with his family. All right? This defense attorney is actually ticked about that. Attorney John P. Gilligan said police stopped a phone conversation between Nadal Hassan and one of his brothers Friday because it was not in English. Gilligan told the San Antonio Express News on Monday that police at Brooke Army Medical Center in San Antonio refused to let Hassan pray in Arabic from the Quran with his brother. Now, the attorney says he thinks that's illegal and a violation of religious rights. Hassan has been charged with 13 counts of premeditated murder and 32 counts of attempted premeditated murder for the November 5th attack. Now, and the military has imposed restrictions requiring all communication visits be in English or be delayed until an interpreter is present. Now, this guy murders 13 and injures another 32, some of which are still not necessarily out of the woods. And they won't allow this jackass to pray in Arabic over the phone with his brother. They tell him it's got to be English. And the attorney, John P. Gilligan, doesn't like it. Now, I have to ask, why would you go to the San Antonio Press and look for any sort of sympathy out of the people of Texas or the people of the United States for this jackass who murdered 13 and injured another 32? You have got to be kidding me. They should be happy that this guy is even able to have a phone call or any sort of visitation, be it over the phone, internet, person, whatever he gets. And you're trying to gain sympathy because this homicidal Islamic fundamentalist scuzzball, this Islamo-fascist murderer, isn't allowed to pray in Arabic over the phone. And you get your dainty little attorney ass up there and actually expect to get some form of sympathy? You think that it's illegal and think it's a violation of religious rights? Let me tell you something, John P. Gilligan. You're an idiot. You are the quintessential scuzzball, scumbag, scourge of the earth, filth, attorney that everyone views your entire profession to be. Thank you for being Exhibit A of exactly what the American public believes the legal profession has turned into. You suck. That's all I have to say about John P. Gilligan, attorney at law, out of San Antonio, Texas. Let me tell you something, John P. Gilligan, attorney at law out of San Antonio, Texas. If you were the last attorney available, I would defend myself. Seriously? Because the guy's on the phone with his brother. The people don't know what he's saying, what he's going about. He decides to pray in Arabic over the phone. Wait a minute. We're not going to allow you to do that. You got to be in English because we don't have an interpreter. We don't know what you're saying. And now you're saying that's a violation of religious rights? Maybe. Possibly. Maybe. And you're actually going to the press looking for sympathy for a guy who murdered 13 people and tried to murder an additional 32. Now, by the math, that's 45 people he tried to kill. 45. And he killed better than 1 in 3. And you're trying to get some sort of sympathy out of the American public, especially out of the people of the great state of Texas. Wow. You know, John P. Gilligan, I'm thinking that you should stuff your own head in a toilet, a dirty one at that, and give yourself swirlies throughout the entire day, maybe for the next couple of days. Just swirly yourself, because that's what, in my day, that's what we would do to some complete ignoramus jackass who opened his mouth about something so stupid we would do. We would pick you up. We would hold your hands. We would hold your feet. And like a stiff torpedo, stuff your head in a toilet and just flush away. That is the type of hazing that me and the boys I grew up with would do to someone like you for saying something so ignorant about something so unbelievably tragic, coming to the defense of this jackass who tried to kill 45 people. And you're coming to his defense because they wouldn't let him pray in Arabic over the phone. Then when we were done with you in the toilet giving you a swirly, we'd probably dump you in a garbage can. Maybe we should go back to old school, playground rules. Stay tuned, guys. More to come. This is Bill Carnes, right here, hosting 2A Radio.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
By dictators since 1917. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
All right. One of the sure ways to ensure that bad guys will continue committing crimes is to allow them to, and offer no consequences or no repercussions from it. They say crime does not pay, but in fact, statistics show that the average criminal will commit well over 100 crimes before getting caught for a single one. Now, some criminals are much worse than others, so they might get caught every other or every third time. While others are very good, they might commit 1,000 crimes before getting caught. But the average is about 100 or so, so in fact, crime really does pay. Well, a northern Idaho pharmacist decided to take the action into his own hands. And he tackled a gun-toting robber and received a special award from the city of Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. And in thanks for that, he was fired, dismissed from the Shopko Pharmacy late last month because he resisted the robbery. Now, a Shopko spokeswoman at the company's corporate office in Green Bay, Wisconsin, declined to comment. On November 18th, Gunderson chased after the gunman, who police say had stolen 6 bottles of anti-anxiety prescription medication, then tackled him near the entrance of the store. Gunderson said he initially was only trying to get information for police. He says, "I figured I'd get something, anything to aid them," Gunderson told the Coeur d'Alene Press. He says, I wasn't trying to apprehend him at all. Had I known he had a gun, I would have never gone after him. When Gunderson neared the front of the store, he saw the man had tried to go out the store entrance, but was blocked by the shut door. And there he was, Gunderson says. And he says, "I've got a gun." Gunderson said he saw the man reach into his pocket. "I'm thinking, I don't want to find out the hard way if you have a gun," said Gunderson, a former college wrestler in the 189-pound category. He says, "So I tackled him." He said when the gun fell to the floor and the two wrestled for it until police arrived a short time later and arrested Jason Anthony Wall, 29, of Pomeroy, Washington. Wall had been charged with robbery, unlawful possession of a firearm, and aggravated assault. He's being held in the Kootenai County Jail on $250,000 bond. Gunderson later received a Citizens Appreciation Award from city leaders. Gunderson said he had found another job at a different pharmacy. Police Sergeant Jeff Walther said the department doesn't encourage citizens intervening in a robbery attempt, but that Gunderson's actions deserved recognition. It speaks even more to Jerry that not only did he put his safety in jeopardy, but his economic future. Now, according to Gunderson, it's done. It's in the past. I've moved on. My boss loved me. I know that. Someone 3,000 miles away decided to fire me. So, Bill Karn's response is, anyone living in the 13 states where Shopko has a presence, my suggestion is, you write a couple of letters. One to the manager of the store in your town. The other to the corporate offices of Shopko, which you can go online and look it up. S-H-O-P-K-O, Shopko, one word. And you can send a letter to their Green Bay, Wisconsin corporate headquarters explaining to them why you will no longer shop at Shopko. That's if you would do as I would do. There are no Shopkos where I live. If there were Shopkos where I live, they would lose a certain percentage of their income based on my not shopping there any longer. And also of those who I know who also would not put up with this scuzzball robbing us. I give a damn about your store policy. This guy did the right thing. Just because you have a poor store policy, your store policy sucks, rather than changing your sorry, lame-ass store policy, you're going to fire somebody who did what they should have done because your store policy is the mistake. Oh, it's policy. It's policy to have to agree with somebody who's committing felonies. It's policy. Not that those drugs the guy was getting out of there were going to end up on the street and most likely in the systems of kids. Maybe one of your kids, Shopko corporate scuzzballs. Then again, you know, you work for Shopko. Maybe you provide your own kids with drugs, you scumbags. Moving on. Out of New York City. Now, we've been hearing about this. I got to tell you, one of the littlest infantile men on planet Earth. I mean, just a tiny, tiny man, human being, like, really, barely barely even male, I would imagine, including by appendage. But this guy, he's just such a little, little man. Just a pathetic little excuse for a man. Mayor Michael Bloomberg. This guy's made money, something to do with the markets, and he uses that money to wield around power, get in front of the House and the Senate, and form his mayors against illegal guns, which is mayors against all guns. My political group to try to strip guns from the American people is really what it should be called. And this guy actually went so far as to hire a company by the name of Kroll Associates, which is an alleged high-end detective firm, to go to other states, including my state of Nevada, and have these guys pose as though they would be, I guess, kind of a shady individual looking to buy guns, and whether or not somebody would sell somebody who's putting out a shady characteristics, a set of shady characteristics, whether or not someone would actually sell them a gun. Well, as it turns out, we've been wondering whether Bloomberg paid for this out of his own pocket or whether it came out of the public funds of the city of New York for the mayor to, on his own, without any other approval, hire Kroll Associates and pay them to go to other states, not even neighboring states, other states around the country to play this little game. Did it come at the expense of the taxpayers of the city of New York? Well, as it turns out, he did. The Daily News shows the city law department has paid nearly $1.5 million out of public funds to Kroll Associates for its undercover probe of out-of-state gun sales. Now, this tiny little infantile man, and man doesn't even really, it's an insult to the word man to use it when talking about Bloomberg, announced the results of that investigation with a big splash in October, playing secretly recorded videos of dealers improperly selling guns at gun shows. Now, notice it doesn't say illegally, it says improperly. And that's really their interpretation. Detectives were able to buy guns even after saying they wouldn't pass a background check. Actually said they didn't think they would pass a background check. Or after having a friend fill out the requested purchase for them, as if somebody knew that that was going to be a straw purchase, so they broke the law. Bloomberg posted the videos on YouTube, edited, of course. And what he said was, this translates into people getting killed, children, adults, police officers. It's time Congress did something. So the people of New York City paid for all of this, for Bloomberg to use as his big mouthpiece. The production didn't come cheap. The investigators and their bosses billed the city between $225 an hour and $325 an hour each. Some of them for more than 100 hours per month. As they traveled to gun shows in Nevada, Ohio, and Tennessee, they spent tens of thousands of dollars on airfare, hotel, meals, and travel expenses on top of their average $275 an hour rate. They also billed the city for tens of thousands of dollars for background checks, research costs, cash payments for guns and equipment, including $58,100 for recording gear. The city of New York has no control over the federal government's firearms laws, of course, but Bloomberg has crusaded about illegal guns because 90% of guns used in city crimes come from out of state, according to him. A 2006 series of stings against out-of-state gun dealers, which cost a reported $2 million, brought federal scrutiny to notorious dealers and cut the flow of gun sales with loose gun laws, according to the city. In actuality, the attorney generals of these states, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, told Bloomberg, stay out of our state. Don't do this again. We'll arrest everyone else, and we'll put out an arrest warrant for you, too. Now, a study found the number of guns from those dealers recovered by the NYPD fell by 75%. And the number of guns from the five states where those dealers were located fell 18%. Sure they did. New Yorkers got their money's worth from our last investigation, said John Fairblatt, Bloomberg's criminal justice coordinator. Bloomberg spokesman Jason Post refused to say whether the city's planning more high-priced undercover stings, but he said the $1.5 million for the last one was well worth it. Now, why don't you ask the people who are actually footing that bill there, Bloomberg, and who is your other lackey here, John Feinbault? Why don't you ask the people actually footed the bill? Huh? What else could that, what is now $3.5 million together, could have done for the city? Other than something that has done nothing for the city. I mean, come on. We have more anti-gunners on the bandwagon trying to get what they call assault weapons. What they really mean are the sport utility weapons out of the hands of people in the state of Washington. And here's a real interesting thing. If you want to get some sort of legislation passed to stem the rights of people, to stem their rights and add more bureaucracy, one of the things you do is you go to an organization comprised, it would be a minority-based organization. When it comes to trying to get guns away and stifle people's rights to keep and bear arms, oftentimes you'll go to an African-American organization and you try to get them online to help stem gun rights. The reason is there tends to be a fair amount of gun violence in highly populous African-American communities. That's just what the statistics tell us. So you get those community leaders to say, oh yeah, guns are bad. Not, we need to do something about the family. We need to do something about the education. We need to do something about the community support. No, what we need to do is we need to get rid of guns, because that's the evil thing. Right? Not that these people would be absolutely church-going gems if they didn't have guns. The gun makes them evil is what they're trying to draw the conclusion. You take someone who's an otherwise good, upstanding person, you put a gun in their hand, they become a homicidal maniac, is what these people would like to have you believe. So members of the African-American community have joined forces with the state of Washington's Washington Ceasefire, of course an anti-gun group, to try to promote legislation that would ban military-style weapons in the state of Washington. In response to the shooting death of Aaron Sullivan, 18, in July of this year, three state lawmakers, all Democrats, plan to propose legislation in the upcoming legislative session to ban the sale of these types of assault weapons. One 18-year-old kid gets shot with some sort of semi-automatic rifle. So now they want to introduce legislation to ban these guns in the state of Washington. Okay. Now, I am certain that somebody in the state of Washington was killed by someone driving a Ford pickup. So, should we now ban Ford pickups in the state of Washington? I would imagine more than one person has died at the hands of a Ford truck. Or maybe a Chevy truck. Or, you know, who knows? Maybe in International makes those big armored trucks. I wonder how many people have been killed in the state of Washington in accidents with an armored truck built by International. Should we ban those too? According to Washington Ceasefire, these weapons, which have high-capacity magazines capable of holding more than 100 rounds of ammunition, are designed so that relatively unskilled soldiers can inflict maximum casualties despite their poor marksmanship. Now tell me, anyone and everyone who has ever served in the United States military, I'm talking to the millions of you out there, how many of you are not completely appalled and offended by that statement? These guns are designed so that relatively unskilled soldiers can inflict maximum casualties despite their poor marksmanship. Wow. There's a legislation called the Aaron Sullivan Public Safety and Police Protection Bill would prohibit the sale of military-style assault weapons to private citizens and require current owners to pass background checks. These are weapons of war, said Ralph Facatoli, or whatever the hell his name is, president of Washington Ceasefire. And sadly, they are the weapon of choice for people who are looking to kill policemen. Now he's drawing that conclusion. I have to tell you, they are guns of war because we the people reserve the ultimate authority and the ultimate right of the control of our country, our government, and our warfare. And that freedom and power comes to us through the ability to use the appropriate firearms. Stay tuned, guys. More to come.
Your right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back.
Back off, I'll take you on. Headstrong to take on anyone. I know that you are wrong, and this is not where you belong.
Okay, so these gun grabbers in Washington want to take away your sport utility rifles by calling them assault rifles and then launching all sorts of lies and BS and extravagant loads of garbage. And just trying to basically shed nothing but negative light to further their own personal agendas. Here's a statement here out of some scuzzball former assistant chief. We know there are three groups of people that should not have access to these type of weapons. Felons, the mentally ill, and our children, said former Seattle Police Department Assistant Chief Harry Bailey. Most of the people who have these types of weapons have no training with them. Hey, first of all, how do you know? Second of all, we know that three groups of people should not have access to these types of weapons. Okay. Felons, the mentally ill, and children of certain age and mental status should not have access to any weapons. As a matter of fact, if you'll check the laws that are already on the books in the state of Washington and on the federal books, you'll find that there's already laws against the mentally ill, felons, and young children from possessing firearms. He continues with, these weapons fire as many as 200 rounds per minute. These guns are not meant for sporting. They're meant for one purpose, to kill as many people as quickly as they possibly can. Okay, let me correct you a little bit. First of all, they can fire more than 200 rounds per minute. I guarantee I can get more than 200 rounds per minute out of, say, an AR or an AK or any other number of these guns, Mini 14. But I know how to run the gun. And he continues with, these guns are not meant for sporting. They're meant for one purpose, to kill as many people as quickly as they possibly can. Not actually true. They are not meant for sporting. But the Second Amendment wasn't for sporting. It's not for sporting. It's not for hunting. It's for defense. These guns are designed for shooting at people. That's why I own them. Because if I need to shoot at somebody, I want the most efficient shoot-at-somebody type of gun I can have. Now, they are not meant to kill as many people as quickly as they possibly can. They're meant to be able to get good, reasonable hits at reasonable distance with the least amount of effort and the highest probability of taking them out of the fight. That's what they're made for. So you're close, but you're off. You're really skewing it. And to keep all of this in line, yet again, scuzzballs, that is exactly what the Second Amendment exists to preserve. I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you, and Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule. Stay tuned for the Global Research Hour coming up next, followed by Ernest Hancock.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Will your freedoms? The Two-Way Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.
I will not bow. I will not bow.